You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
That's the first time I've ever seen hardcore dancing, and I was fucking mortified, terrified, like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to hide in the back. I am definitely going to die tonight. But it was like crazy because I remember watching it being like, dude, like people really care about this music. And like, never did I expect for music, especially like just how much it means to me now. Looking back then, like not knowing how much of an impact it was going to have on me.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I most certainly hope you've been having an excellent week. I most certainly have been. But guess what, people? It's Friday. We did it. Tomorrow's the weekend, and we are already entering the second week of March, which, as you may know, is basically the 1 year anniversary of the pandemic. So how are you going to celebrate? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to enjoy some life, metal, and craft beer, and try to reminisce on some of the best things that came out of the pandemic for me. So I encourage you to do the same. Before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to encourage you to subscribe to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice if you have not already. But more than that, I'm asking you to rate it and write a review, because when you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and that would be something that I would truly, truly appreciate. I'm also inviting you to sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That is voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all the details for everything that has happened in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast throughout the past week, including all the details for any episodes which I have dropped throughout that week, if I have been a guest on someone else's podcast, as well as the links for any upcoming live interview, Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs, as well as the links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on Apple Music and Spotify, and is curated by my man, Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself. Do yourself a favor, sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. This is a party that you do not want to miss. Now, on today's episode, I am with Rob Wharton of Cognitive. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 241.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today I'm with Rob Wharton of Cognitive. He also runs Fresh to Death Productions. How you doing there, Rob?
As good as can be during everything.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's exactly where I was headed. I love to throw this curveball question right at the beginning, is how have you coped with 2020? As he shows us his beer, yes.
It's something else, man. I don't leave the house much. I get my groceries delivered and everything, man. I go, you know, working home.
Crazy. That's actually something that I discovered through the pandemic, is ordering groceries online, that I have not stopped. It saves a bunch of time. I love it.
Dude, I tell people, even like when I'm done with this, like when all this blows over, I'm still going to do it.
Same, 100% same.
It's like $5 or $10 extra, and you're like, I don't have to deal with it. And during this, like, the one place everyone has to go is go get their groceries. So, like, why am I going to go be around everyone I don't have to be around for an extra $5 or $10?
Absolutely. It's totally not worth it. And the time is something that's so valuable to me. Let's talk a little bit about beer, of course, because it's Vox and Hops, and it's Vox and Hops is all about me hanging out with my metal friends and talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. What beer do you have on your side there, Rob, we're going to share virtually?
So it's called Rails. It's from this local brewer to my area called Acco Brewing Company, and my buddy just started working there, and I was on my way home, and I was like, yo, you there? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, can I grab something from you? I got an interview tonight. And I was like, can you just meet me outside with somebody? He was like, this actually don't come out till tomorrow.
Oh, I love it.
This is super advanced placement timing and all that. So we got the early preview right here. So it's called Rails. It's a Double IPA.
Beautiful. Love it. On my side, I'm going to be drinking Dr. Porter, which is a cherry vanilla porter from my friends from Le Fermatar Microbrasserie. It is a super metal-ass metal brewery from here, just outside of Montreal in L'Assomption, and I love them to death. It has the whole Christmas wax top going on. I'm going to crack this open. Let's talk a little bit about, while I open this up, you can talk about that beer, what you think about it, and then tell me about if you're a craft beer enthusiast.
It's actually way better than I was ready for. I was ready for anything at that point. It's funny, I didn't get into the craft beer stuff until probably the past year or so, because I've always been a hard alcohol guy, and I recently like really discovered I do like the IPA taste. I used to be all about just like Guinness. I used to drink Guinness, and Cherry Wheat, Sam Adams, but one of my good buddies got me into the IPA stuff recently, and I was like, wow, this is like really good. And it's funny because for me, I get tuned up quicker off of beer than I do hard alcohol, I notice.
Really?
Yeah, I could slam Captain.
Cheers, yes.
So I realized that I can definitely throw back more hard alcohol than I can with beer. Like if I have three or four beers, I'm like, all right, I'm done, guys, or else I'm going to be puking.
It's so much more bloating. That's why. This is great. The cherry, the vanilla really comes through. The Dr. Pepper Porter. This was aged in bourbon. I forgot to mention. They just started their aging program, Le Fermatar, and I've had a few, and this one is really good. So to keep your eye on if you can get it, people. Le Fermatar. Very cool. Go for it.
If you got to go to the most bottom of the barrel beer that you can stand, what do you go for?
Here in Quebec, I go for a Labatt 50 is what I would drink if I was really stuck and super thirsty and I needed to have a beer for some reason. That is my go-to big market beer.
Yeah, my buddies make fun of me because I'll be like, dude, because like I just got recently like started like actually enjoying beer, I'll drink anything when it comes to beer. I'm like, dude, like if I can drink an IPA, I will, but like they make fun of me. I'll be like, dude, I'll drink a Budweiser. They're like, it's terrible. I'm like, I don't care. It's beer. So I'm new to it in the grand scheme of things. So I'm definitely can't like have my beer snob nose on. Like, yeah, dude, I'm too good for this or that.
There's definitely been nights on tour that we dip into the bus reserves after we finish our craft beer, and we're like, don't judge me. Don't judge. I remember one time we were on an off day, actually it was with Belphegor, and the only beer that was left was a warm Coors Light, and me and Chris Donaldson and Ali Pinar of Cryptopsy were sitting outside the bus in a parking lot. I believe it was in Ontario, California, if that place exists or if my brain is just crazy. It was definitely just outside of LA. And we were drinking this warm, warm Coors Light, and it was just so bad.
The other day, actually, we were like, I'll drink some Silver Bullets. I think I seen you guys on that tour. That was with Panzerfaust? Were they on?
Yes, there? Yes. My Canadian boys. Yes, yes. I remember the venue. I remember the show. I remember everything about that day.
Yes, it's terrible. That venue is in danger right now.
Really?
Yeah, Voltage Lounge is struggling. They started doing a petition because that's 10 years been there, that building.
Yeah, it was a cool, cool little venue. I definitely enjoyed that. I definitely remember everything about that day. I did the typical jog to the Rocky statue. I really did.
Dude, you guys had a killer. That was probably one of my favorite. I've seen you guys four or five times. I've only seen them with you, actually. But I think that was probably my favorite time seeing you guys. I've seen you there. I've seen you at Champs. Seen you somewhere else, and then we played with you guys at Maryland Death Fest.
Yes, yes. Also, one of my milestone shows. I love that gig. Definitely big, big, big place in my heart, that gig. Let's talk about music. Let's go back to your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' and guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the music? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
My dad never had an interest in music at all.
Really?
Yeah, my dad was like, if we got in the car, like sometimes he would turn on the radio and it would be like oldies station, and like I didn't want nothing to do with it because thank God I would get in the car with my mom and I'm 37. I would get in the car with my mom and she would put on the radio and it would be Alice in Chains and Stone Temple Pilots. So like that was my radio stations growing up. And that's, you know, they're some of my favorite bands to this day, you know, Soundgarden, all the stuff that was on the radio at that era, except for Nirvana. I'm not a Nirvana fan, but everything else from that era was like on the radio at that time. And that's what got me into just music, period. I would hear that. And then you go through the motions, you know, you find Metallica and then you find that next band. And it was kind of all that. And then I think like my first extreme metal bands, like super death metal, like Death, Dying Fetus, and Cephalic Carnage were probably like my first three real death metal bands I found.
What would have been that first band that was your band that you cherished, that you realized that there was more to just what your mother was listening to?
Either Alice in Chains or like getting outside of what my mom had on, it was probably Metallica, because Metallica wasn't like something she really listened to. Because it wasn't on the radio much at that time.
Exactly, yeah. Delving into the older stuff. I was the same. It took me years, even to this day. I'm not huge on Nirvana. I don't get it.
It's just one of them bands. And, like don't get me wrong. Like, I know they did a lot for music. But for me, it just never captivated me. There's a lot of bands out there. People make fun of me all the time. Like, I was never... I never caught on to Motorhead was a band that I never caught on to. And people are like, why? Like, how do you like Motorhead? I'm like, dude, it just never grabbed me.
Let's talk about shows. You remember that first show that you went to go see, the first live music experience?
My very first show ever was, I went to go see Incubus and 311.
Wow.
That was my very first show. Attached to Voltage Lounge is the Electric Factory, and that was my first show ever in Philly.
Really? Wow.
And that was like my first show. I think my second show was Offspring and Cypress Hill. And then it was like I somehow stumbled into metal shows, and that was it.
Do you remember that first experience at a metal gig and seeing a pit, and what was your feelings towards that? I remember my first was just absolute horror and fear. Honestly.
Because my first like real metal show that I remember going to was this band Agents of Man, Zayo, God Forbid, who at that time was like my gateway into metal bands. Like that was like the Determination era of God
Forbid. Yeah, man.
Huge life changer for me. And then E-Town Concrete headlined. And for me, it was wild because like we had always known about push moshing. No, shoulder. That was the first time I ever seen hardcore dancing. And I was fucking mortified, terrified. Like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to hide in the back. I am definitely going to die tonight. But it was like crazy because I remember watching it and being like, dude, like people really care about this music. And like, never did I expect for music, especially like just how much it means to me now, looking back then, like not knowing how much of an impact it was going to have on me.
Just the rabbit hole, so deep, so slippery.
I'm sure you remember that too, just being like, dude, like this is awesome.
It was super intriguing, right? But I was terrified.
Oh, dude, I was right there with you.
Well, at what point did you start playing? Why are you in a band now? How did this all come together?
It was just so, I'll never forget this. I got like my first real guitar for Christmas, and I think I wanted a PlayStation. I didn't get the PlayStation. I was like really mad. I was like, damn it, I really wanted that PlayStation. And it's so funny because like I look back and I'm like, dude, I'm so glad I got a guitar. And it was just like, you know, I remember like I was in a new metal band for a while and then started playing like more death metal bands. And I was just like, dude, I love this. I love this. I love this. And then, you know, started doing the weekend tour stuff with some of my old bands. And then it just kept getting into like, and I got to go join a bigger band, another bigger band. And it was just like, this is fun. This is fun. And then like you start seeing, like, I never thought I would leave our area, let alone like go around the country and the world at some point like we have, you know. So like I love it. I love it. And then like I guess that bleeds into me like being like, oh, I'd love to start, you know, like when I help book tours and throw shows, like I was like, I can help people. And I can help people from a musician standpoint where I'm like, I can benefit the venue, I can benefit the bands playing. And to me, I love the community.
Absolutely. It's something very special and it's unique, and it's not something that transcends necessarily into other genres.
It's that, and what I think is really special about metal is like, and it goes even for you, like, you know, you are in for what most people would consider a legendary death metal band, and like, and inspiring, and you're still in the community and the groups on Facebook and all, and you're talking to everyone. No one, for the most part, is ever too good to just be like, I'll talk to this guy about the first Morbid Angel record, or, you know, dude, I remember first time I ever met Flo. Actually, that was another time I've seen you guys on Obituary tour.
Hell yeah, that was so much
Joe
fun.
Joe Sincotta is a very good friend of mine. And yes. Yeah. And I remember I talked to Flo about Candiria for about 45 minutes.
Yeah, he loves them.
Oh, me and him were nerding out. I was like, that was so important, because that was the first time I ever met him. And I was like, that was so awesome, because like, he's my favorite death metal drummer of all time, is Flo. And I was like, talking to him about my second favorite metal drummer ever. And no one knows about Candiria. So like, to me, I was just like, so many people are like that, though.
Absolutely. But you know, when, even if you're in a legendary band, we're still just all guys, and you know that. And that's why Vox and Hops works.
Yeah, but it's just funny, because like, some people are like, oh, dude, like, you don't think that people would be like that. And I'm like, dude, like, most of us still have jobs, and we're just like, you know, like, we just want to hang out with the boys, you know what I mean? That's what it comes down to, and talk about sports or whatever. Like, but it's cool, because like, when you're younger, you don't think that.
No. It's especially back then. I think it's less so now with social media and all of these stars being so transparent with their lives, or transparent to the extent that they want to portray of their lives. So you were getting a glimpse into someone you idolize's life much more frequently and more transparent versus back in the day when it was all an enigma.
Right. Yeah. Maybe you would write a letter to the guy, you know, and send them your demo cassette.
Because he wants to hear it.
Yeah, and obviously the demos are the best. Everything after the demos is terrible.
One story that I have heard, though, that of exactly something like that happening is Alex O'Byrne was on tour in Germany, I believe, and Mohammed gave him the Necrophagist demo tape back in the day.
Yeah. I don't know if it's true, but it's a story that I have heard.
That's probably worth $1 million right now.
It probably is. Maybe it's got some unreleased material that everyone would want to hear.
The guy's sitting on a gold mine.
Do you remember that first show, your first time on stage when you played a gig?
Yes. No. You know what? I can't say I remember my very, very first show, but like, I can remember like my first couple like impactful shows to me where I was like, wow. And it's like, it's funny because even like you're saying, like, you can remember your first show when you're younger, but like, even as you get older and you've been doing it a while, there's still shows that you're like, I'll never forget that. Like you said, you played Maryland Death Fest. You're like, I'm never going to forget this.
No, it was a pure moment of joy and accomplishment.
I can't remember my exact first show, I don't think, but I can like, there's definitely shows I remember. I was like, that was really special or important to me.
Very cool.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Let's talk about, you mentioned that the Voltage Lounge is in trouble. A new question that I've been throwing at people recently is, when do you realistically see touring coming back?
Safely? I would love to say late summer, early fall of 2021, at least being the test area of maybe these bands are going to do it and it's not a dumb idea, versus, you know, people trying to do it now. It's like not the smartest thing to do it right now, obviously, you know. I would love to say that, but I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously over here we're starting to get the vaccines distributed and all, so I guess we're in that let's wait and see phase before anything happens, but my heart pleads for the small bands to the big bands and all the venues and all the staff and the agents and the management and everything, man. It's hard.
100%. And the crew members too, all the people that normally work in these small venues that they can't even work in now when they're not on tour with the band. So support your local things you love, people. If you want them to be around, buy some merch, do whatever you can to support the things you love.
Yeah. I do think that, when people feel safe again, I think there's going to be a newfound resurgence in the love for going to shows. And I think you're going to see less of the, I wish I went to that show, because now it's going to be, I went, because we, you know, a lot, like, dude, for me, like, aside from playing shows, I try to go to 3 shows a week when I can. Like, wow. I love it, man. I love it so much. And for me, like, I've been mega depressed from this, but like, I just know that I think there's going to be people that are like, I realize what I missed out on now.
I can't wait for that first intro. You know, I would love for it to be Crown of Horns and just to watch a pit go. And I know that first one is going to just be so intense.
You know what I want? You know what I want? If I could be there for your first show, the first song hitting live. And I don't remember if you remember me and you talking about this before. I want to see In the Kingdom Where Everything Dies, The Sky is Immortal, because me and you were talking about, I've never seen you guys play any Once Was Not material, and I would love it. I would love it.
We've pulled out some stuff recently, but not that track. And I do like that track, so we should. Ollie Pinard is our set list master. So we'll see. I would like to, and I'm super stoked for stuff to come back. Of course, I totally miss that vibe, everything about playing a show, the little butterflies.
Beer being spilled on you by some guy, you know, all that stuff.
Maybe not that part, but unless it's a craft beer. But I'm lucky I get to fill the void of not going to gigs, not performing, by doing these interviews. I get that little sense of excitement right before I start. Am I prepared enough? Is the guy going to connect? Is the person going to connect? How are you filling the void?
So I hate to throw this out there because everyone's been doing it. We had written a new record, so that was been a big focus for me this whole time, was okay, because we had canceled, I think, 4 tours.
Yeah, yeah. You guys were gonna go out with my boys in Half, Hail Half.
We were doing that. We had a European tour we had to cancel.
Oh shit.
Yeah, we had ordered merch for all of it. We were like, we order it now. We had a full U.S. tour and a Canadian tour, and all of it had to get canned. And that's nothing, you know. And bands have lost a lot more than us this year. But when that all happened, I said, you know what? Full steam ahead on the record. Let's just focus on that. And there was no, okay, well, we got to worry about this show or that show. It was literally every day I would just wake up, practice, write, go back to the drawing board. And that's been it.
So yeah, three, you wake up just, you know, I remember the somber moment when everything crashed in March, and I was depressed for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then you just got to start the engines and push that creative energy into a positive direction to keep the ship moving.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the saying, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah, yeah, you can't stay there.
So that's always been my motto for when I'm going through tough shit. So for me, it was just, we've got work to do, man. Like, still got to do it, you know, some way. And it was different for us because we've always been a, let's get together, practice, write stuff together, rehearse on the side. And there was none of that. Everything was written from our houses, sending each other files back and forth and stuff. Well, the last time we had a band practice was February.
Wow, okay.
And we just started in the studio like 3 weeks ago with no band rehearsals at all.
Well, what? Tell me the impact of that. I'm curious. You guys are so normally used to being in shape, knowing the tunes, and being a trained professional, which you guys are, but a rehearsed professional versus coming from the house. What was the big challenges with that?
It was more just like, I know where I'm at with the record. I hope this guy did his part, and no one knows. You know what I mean? Because we've been very proactive and mask wearing, not being around anyone. And it was like, okay, we've all been safe, you know, we got tested, we're avoiding stuff, we've got to be in a room together to record, wear our masks. But it was, we haven't seen each other play. So it was just get in there, and it was like, wow, the drums sound really good. So then it was like us playing guitar, and it was like, this is going better than we thought. Like, everyone did their homework. And our bass player, like, it's his first record with us. And, like, he just recorded yesterday was his first day recording bass with us. And we went in there. We're like, you know, I hope he's going to do good. I trust him. And he went in there and blew our minds. Absolutely blew our minds. And
it's going to be the singer. It's going to be the singer. He's going to be dragging his feet. No.
Honestly, I'll give him credit, man. Like, I love to break his chops, but he is probably the most prepared at all times to do his stuff. And he takes his vocals seriously. I'll give him that. He's not the guy that's like, oh, yeah, I'll just get in there and scream when it's time. Like, he's always like, I got to make sure my shit sounds good.
Good, yet I'm just teasing, of course. Yeah.
Well, I'll make fun of him. It's fine.
So what this new album, what can people expect? Is it an evolution? Is it more of the same? What how would you describe this new album?
Everyone's always going to say the new record's the better one. I think it's our best artwork. Like, everything that we got so far, like, and I've been a big fan of all our album arts, but this one, like, really impressed us. The album, I think it was just more mature in the fact that, like, we were all like, let's cut out some of this, the, like, really dumb stuff we do, like, just to do it. Whether it was, let's make a tech part just to be super techy and flashy, or let's get rid of the super heavy slam part that's after another slam just to be heavy and see kids mosh. And it was like, let's really take our time and write everything meaningfully and just really get it done well. And I think there's a lot of different stuff. Like, I think we really, like, honed in on, like, some Surreption vibes, a lot of ulcerate, artificial brain stuff.
Hell yeah.
And I think we got back to some of our slam roots when we do get disgusting. So, you know, I do think our vocalist, like, really, he's got so many voices. And I think the way he tamed it down in a way is going to make the music stand out more. We all had, like, a lot of input on each other's parts where everyone was just super hard on each other about stuff. And I think it really made me feel good yesterday starting to hear the bass and everything. And I was like, I'm really proud of this.
Good.
Because for me, like, I want people to love the band and I want people to love the music. And I want it to be that record that goes, you're going to go on tour with this big band or that big band. Like, everyone wants that. Everyone wants that. But I was also like, if that doesn't happen with this record, I'm happy with what we produced as musicians this time, like, I think more than ever.
Very cool, very cool. Give a shout out to that artist that you love so much that made the artwork.
It's Pedro Cena. He's called Lordigan Art. He did our last record, Matricide, and he really knocked it out of the park, and he had it done really quick.
Very cool, very cool. If you could, if you know, the cards all line up properly, if you could plan a dream release tour for this new record, does it have a name, this new record?
I can't say it yet.
Okay. What bands would be on this tour?
How many bands are we doing?
Oh, a typical nice tour package, you know, so, like, say four bands with you guys.
Counting us. Okay. I would probably say, this is me, probably say... And how big can I go here? Or are we being realistic?
It's your release tour, so.
The headliners probably would be something like Meshuggah. And then it would probably be Arch Spire and Cryptopsy.
Oh, that'd be a fun tour. I'd like that.
Not the dick ride. But I think it would be something like that.
Very cool, very cool. I've been wanting to play with Wormed for far too long. I think I only played one show with them in Gothum Fest in I think it's in Slovenia. I might be wrong. Someone will slam me in the comments if I'm wrong, please.
Let's talk about being a manager.
How dare you not remember every show you played?
we got to our first tour for Cognitive was with this band, actually. We toured with Wormed.
Really? I love them.
Dude. Fucking amazing band. I love that band. And they were really good guys. We had a great time hanging out with them.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Fresh to Death Productions. Let's talk about being a manager, helping booking shows. What excites you in that? And obviously now it's a bit more quiet on the show front, but are you still involved very much in the manager side?
Yeah, I mean, I manage Half, you know. I manage Wormhole, a bunch of other bands. I love it because for me, it's important to be able to help the bands out when you're in the trenches with the bands yourself. You know what I mean? Because like you're like, I know what I need on tour, so let me get this band on. And vice versa. I like being able to go, I'm a promoter, so I don't want to sit there and tell a band, a promoter, that a band needs $6,000 when they're only bringing $1,500
yep.
worth of business in. Because at the same time, you know, then I think that makes it burns bridges with bands where they're like, dude, I'm not, the promoter's not going to bring that band through. Or then the promoter might not ever be able to recoup from a show like that if they lose their money, and then they can't throw a show again. And that only hurts the community. So like for me, like, no, I'm not saying I'm the cure for anything in this. I'm not, please don't ever think that, because I'm not, and I'm not perfect. But I think that that, like, for me, that was my mentality of getting into the business end of it. And for shows, like, I definitely only do stuff that I'm like, I can help somebody else out. Like, I remember one time Cattle Decapitation had a date fall through, and I had like 2 days to book it. Wow. And it sold out, and it was awesome. And I was like, I was able to help them. I did that for like Artificial Brain before they needed a tour. Actually, wearing them right now. So like for me, like I try to do it mostly if I can help someone else, like last minute date fall through, they need a routing date. But like I kind of veered away from just throwing like show. I used to do them like once or twice a month. Now I do it if it's only something I'm super passionate about, where I'm like, I need to book that tour, like I need to do it, or somebody's like needs help.
That's amazing. I love it.
There's a lot of stress that comes with it, obviously.
Yes, yes. I would never, ever, ever want to be a promoter.
Dude, it's got its ups and downs. There's parts I love, and there's parts I'm just like, sometimes I'll be throwing a show, and I'm like, oh my God, why did I do this?
Let's go to the ATM. But
dude, I think maybe, knock on wood, maybe I've lost show, like maybe $100 twice.
Really? Good for
thank
you.
Thank God, thank God. But I've always been a guy that's like, I'm not going to bite off more than I can chew. Like, I've told plenty of people, I can't afford that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'm not going to lie to someone, tell you I can give you this much, and then it's, I got to PayPal you in 3 weeks and make...
No, I hate that shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that sucks because you need your money then. You know, I get it. But, you know, at the same time, that's where there's times, just no way I can do it. I can do this much, promised, and if there's extra, I'll give it to a band. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I have no problem being like, here's your back end. You can have every red cent that comes in after your guarantee, but I can't promise X amount of dollars. There's just no way. I got bills to pay.
Good for you. Good for you. And that comes with maturity, I think, as well. If you could brew a collab brew for Cognitive, what style beer would it be? And what would it be called?
It's so funny because I just had this conversation with somebody the other day, and it's so funny because I'm so well prepared for it. It sounds like I've been waiting for years. I wanted to do a cider beer. And call it Matricider.
It works.
And that was the goal. We were actually going to try and do it with a buddy of mine's brewing company, but like it takes so long to get it done and produced and the cans and all. And then it was like, dude, that record's going to be too old by the time we can make this happen. So it just never happened.
You have to start thinking about that next one, the mystery name.
Yeah. But it worked for that one, man. We were like, dude, that would be like a really cool, funny thing. And it just...
Unless you release it when there's an anniversary coming up.
I hope... Dude, I can't wait for any kind of anniversary show.
Me too, yeah. Let's wrap this up with one last question. It probably never happens to you because, you know... You seem to know what's going on, and you're in control of everything, and you know your limits. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
God. I'd love to say never drinking again, but that saying never sticks for anyone.
We all think it, though.
Yeah. It's usually sleep, especially if we're on tour. It's sleep, drink water, and tell everyone to leave me the fuck alone for probably 12 hours. I don't have, and maybe McDonald's. It's like an oil Amazing. Change. It's like an oil change for you.
I love it. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time, sitting down with me, talking about your life, music, and craft beer. I had a great, great time, and I'm looking forward to this new Cognitive material that's coming out. Cheers.
Thank you, man. Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so, so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. I had such a great chat with Rob.
What an excellent human, super funny, down to earth. I love that he plays on both sides of the musician and the show production and management side. I love talking to people like this, people that wear many hats, people that are involved in many different areas of what it means to be a metal musician. I think that's very cool. And I'm excited to get back on the road and to hang out with Rob again. Get ready for that new Cognitive, people. I'm super stoked about their upcoming record, and you most definitely should be too. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely take the time to subscribe to it on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, you should also rate it and write a review, because when you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops podcast, and I would appreciate that greatly. You should also sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That is voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details for everything that has happened in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast throughout the past week. Do yourself a favor, sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. Trust me, this is a party that you do not want to miss. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I most certainly hope you have a wonderful weekend. I am looking forward to relaxing and reminiscing about this past year, because as I mentioned in the intro, we are now at the 1 year mark of the pandemic. So let's reminisce, let's try to focus on the positive, and let's have a good weekend. I'll be back next week with two episodes, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.